Rourke slung the CAR-15 across his back diagonally, muzzle down, and edged over the lip of the grade, hugging the pine trees and low rocks along the side and moving diagonally along the left flank of the attacking brigands. The closest of them, a big man, heavy set, armed with some type of automatic rifle Rourke couldn't immediately identify at the distance, was perhaps 50 yards away, edging along a wall of low rocks running in a zigzag pattern toward the far side of Rubenstein's position. Rourke inched along, flanking the man, but cutting the distance too, timing spurts of his own movements to the covering noise of the brigand's shots. With his left hand, Rourke palmed out the A.G. Russell Black Chrome Sting 1A. The tiny double-edged knife shifted then into his right hand. Looking up over the low wall of rocks, he saw that nothing had changed. He picked his next target, a tall, lanky man with shoulder-length blonde hair and a scraggly beard. Wiping the knife blade clean of blood on the first dead man's trousers, Rourke inched forward over the low rock wall and toward the tall blonde man who was about 25 yards ahead. Rourke made another headlong dash, leaping over a clump of low rocks, sidestepping a half-rotted pine tree trunk, and diving into the man's body just below the waist, throttling him to the ground. Rourke's right hand whipped forward with the knife. His left hand grabbed onto a handful of the greasy hair and jerked the head back to expose the neck. As Rourke drew the knife away, he let the head sag to the rocks. Wiping the blade clean on the blonde man's clothes, Rourke spotted his next target. He wondered how many of them he could take before the dead would be missed and someone would turn around, see him, then start the real shooting. He edged toward a black man, smallish in build but with bare arms rippling with muscles. A .45 automatic was in the man's left hand. The distance was 25, perhaps 30 yards, the precise range hard to tell because of the man's position in the rocks. Rourke closed to 10 yards, then surged forward. He dove toward the man, but the man turned, sidestepping and missing Rourke's knife blade. But Rourke's left arm was solidly hooked on the man's left shoulder and neck, and he brought him down. Rourke lunged upward from his knees with the Sting 1A, the spear point biting deep into the Adam's apple.
Hey!
Rourke's right hand dropped the knife, flashing toward the Detonix pistol under his left armpit. The brigand fell back. His gut split wide because of the angle of the 185-grain jacketed hollow point slug when it impacted. Rourke snatched up his knife, wiped it clean, then holstered it. He drew the second Detonix from under his right arm. With one of the 45s in each fist, Rourke started up the sloping rocks, the brigands turning toward him now, directing their fire away from Rubenstein. Rourke holstered both Detonix, then swung the CAR-15 from his back, his thumb flicking off the safety. From the corner of his left eye, Rourke spotted Rubenstein, moving awkwardly because of the earlier wounds, start down from the rocks, the subgun in his right hand, the 9mm Browning high power in his left. Four brigands were still moving along down toward the base of the rocks and past the clearing, heading for the trees.
The pickups.
Rourke raised the CAR-15. There were two men still running. Rourke let the CAR-15 swing out of the way under his arm. He snatched the magna-ported 6-inch Python from his hip, lining up the dull metallic finish of the gun's front sight with the outlined notch of the Omega rear sight blade. The nearer of the two men went down, rolling forward with his hands outstretched, and Rourke moved his bead over to the last brigand, who was perhaps 75 yards downrange. Rourke turned, swinging the muzzle of the Python around, but eased it down.
You shot him in the back, Rourke!
Only because that was the guy's best-looking side, Paul.